This is Street Knowledge with Chris Graham.
Welcome, welcome. I am Chris Graham. It's Monday as we're recording this podcast, and I'm talking some UVA football news today. I'm trying to make some UVA football news anyway. There's no news, but we'll talk some UVA football anyway. We'll talk Game 5. We'll talk about Game 5 of the NBA Finals, which come up tonight as we're recording this. I have to say as we're recording this, because I listen to podcasts often, just whenever I have the time to do so. And so I'm trying to make this timely for those who are listening, like, day of, like, you can't get enough of it. But if you're waiting to the weekend and saving them all up, hey, we're talking about Game 5. Now you can judge whether or not I was right. So we'll do that. Talk about Terry Bowden being an intern at Clemson. Isn't that something? That's interesting. And then we'll wrap up with some New Japan Pro Wrestling. I got to watch the Dominion show over the weekend, and it was a good show. We'll kind of hit the highlights of that as we go through the podcast. And so we'll start with me trying to make some UVA football news to get people to click and actually just for us all to have something to talk about here on a Monday. And so I've been meaning to do this for a few days, finally got out and did it. You know, because last week I did a column and we talked on a podcast about the way too early top 25s for college basketball for 2019-2020. And there's as many of them as it seems as there are people who write about college basketball. It's just all over the place. Well, I thought, well, you know, I did that one day early last week. And next day, here's what we'll do. We'll do that for college football. Because college basketball doesn't start until November, but college football starts in August, late August, and we'll see what the accumulation of opinion has about the ACC, about the national scene, and how UVA fits in, right? Not easy. I found out that it was not easy to do that. There's just not, you know, with Google anyway, just not a lot of help with, there's not a lot of people who've put this out online. I had to make a run to the bookstore. I mean, that's like a throwback. I had to go buy some actual, and I didn't want to take a notebook in and like write stuff down. You know, these people, they work hard. I work hard. I want people to pay me for what I do. So I bought three books, the three books I could find at the local bookstore. They were The Athlon, Street and Smith, and Lindy's. Phil Still's coming out, I'm sure, at some point. That'd be the other one I'd look for. I mean, maybe, you know, Sports Illustrated, I'm sure will come out with one, probably closer to the season. But for right now, where we are, I've got those three big Bible-like books, so I'll have to start reading them too. But I got them yesterday, opened them up this morning because, you know, busy Sunday for us here, including watching the wrestling I talked about that I'll talk about later in the podcast. Open them up today just to see, you know, again, just to give the cursory glance, where does UVA fit in according to those three publications in the ACC race? Well, two of the three have UVA winning the Coastal Division. I thought that was quite interesting. And the other, it would be Athlon and Street and Smiths have UVA winning the Coastal, and both ranked number 25 in their top 25. So interesting how that worked out. And then also, Lindy's had Virginia third in the Coastal, not ranked in the top 25. So, when you start looking at this, and also I found one. SB Nation actually has, I wouldn't really call it a prediction. It was more like their metrics. They ran simulations, whatever they do, whatever this particular writer did. Anyway, it's the only thing I could find on SB Nation. It was the only other thing I could find anywhere that had a top 25 that had been updated since. There were a bunch that were up, you know, that were put up in January right after the season. There were a few that were that date to right after spring practice being over. You know, you could take those and say they're, you know, what it is, but I don't know. I think as we're getting closer to the season, you know, things have shaken out. Let's see where we are. So SB Nation had the other, and they like I said, that was more of a sort of a, you know, result of simulation kind of thing, and it looked like it had Virginia third overall in the ACC, and it didn't really, I guess, I actually have them listed as third in the Coastal. They gave Virginia's record projected record a 7.6 and 4.4. So, you know, whatever that's worth, right? But it looks like from reading that and then the three magazines that I've got, it looks like a lot of folks think, just like I've been thinking since Scott German and I were walking around the stadium in Charlotte trying to find our way out after the Belk Bowl last year. It was a It was like, I think it was a warm day that day. It wasn't chilly. I don't recall it being chilly that day. It wasn't, you know, it was a nice day. That was a Saturday, like the 29th of December, I think. It was a Saturday, though. 12 o'clock kickoff, 3:30, 4 o'clock. We're walking around, you know, trying to find our way out from sort of, you know, the underbelly of the stadium where we did interviews and such, and trying to get back to our cars. And it was quite a trek. And the whole walk back, we're discussing, all right, where does Virginia fit in this year? Well, Virginia Tech, Miami will get all the love, and likely, you know, this is what I was saying, Virginia Tech and Miami will get all the votes from the writers because they've got the name recognition, and Virginia certainly doesn't, even though I think, and Scott certainly thought too, that Virginia would be the team that should be. If you just put a blind resume out of each of those three programs, what they've got coming back, you would pick Virginia first. I don't think there'd be anybody who would argue that. And that looks like it's going to be the case, you know, heading into the season. And it'll be interesting now. I've been threatening, sort of, in a very friendly way, certainly, to pack the ACC football kickoff, which comes up next month, middle of next month in Charlotte. I've been threatening to pack it, bring as many AFP writers as I can. We all get votes in the media voting for all ACC teams and the predicted order of finish, that kind of thing. And I've been threatening to pack it with AFP guys so we can get some more votes for UVA. But, of course, it's just going to be Scott and I. As is usual for these kind of things. I don't know that I'll need to pack it. I think, you know, I'm starting to get this sense that, you know, you look at the national publications and they're giving UVA the proper love. And it's in part because Virginia is, you know, again, the blind resumes actually are working out well. You know, you've got the second best quarterback in the ACC. And I know Trevor Lawrence is Trevor Lawrence. He's won a national championship already. But Bryce Perkins being second to anybody, 3,600 yards total offense, 34 touchdowns accounted for, 25 in the air, not on the ground. Ran for 92 yards a game, threw for, 277 yards per game. I mean, it's hard to say that guy is second to anybody, but, you know, he's second. So, in the ACC, but he's the best quarterback returning, certainly in the Coastal Division. I think Virginia's got the best defense in the Coastal. Miami would argue that, you know, they were number one in total defense last year, but they were also seventh in scoring defense. And so it looks that, you know, if you ask me, I think Virginia coming back, I mean, the accumulation of yards per game and points per game allowed, they've got, you know, arguably the best defense, and certainly with a lot of guys back from last year's great defense. So, you've got the most accomplished quarterback in the division. You got the best, or one of the best two, along with Miami, best defenses in the division. You know, that should be the formula for a championship-level team. You look at Miami, they've got a new coach. You know, Mark Richt left. He supposedly retired, but it felt like he was forced out. Manny Diaz left to go to Temple, I think it was, and was there for like a day, and then he decides to take the job at Miami. Former defensive coordinator. Who, you know, left very briefly, came back, you know, but they'll have a new quarterback most likely there. You know, so some uncertainty certainly there. I mean, I look at Miami, and they are the sleeping giant of not just this division, but the entire ACC. But they've been that for a number of years now. Dating back, Al Golden, the former head coach, recruited great. He had, you know, it seemed like top five after top five recruiting class, just couldn't get it done. And, you know, we've seen that through the Mark Richt era. Mark Richt took over the job at Miami. Now he's gone, but he took over the job at Miami the same time that Bronco Mendenhall took over at UVA and Justin Fuente took over at Virginia Tech. And in 3 years, you know, had three middling years. Miami still has not been to an ACC championship game, which is so interesting for a program with the pedigree of Miami. And then you look at Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech took a major step back in 2018, first losing season since 1992. You know, they'll have a lot of uncertainty defensively, you know, some question marks on offense. So, you know, it's only because their name is Virginia Tech that they're in any, you know, there's any idea that they could be a top team in the Coastal. And Miami, just for whatever reason, hasn't been able to translate what great talent accumulation that they put together for a number of years now into wins. So, I like Virginia's chances, and it's the only thing that surprises me is that it seems like, obviously, wow, the writers are seeing the same thing. So so that's where we are there. Some UVA football talk here in mid-June. Again, we're about a month off from the ACC kickoff. Well, you know, we'll have full coverage of that, but that's a ways off. In the meantime, I'm going to do as much as I can to educate myself on the entire ACC. That's all we really care about. Here's the ACC, you know, and I guess our Virginia's non-conference opponents as well. Let's do a quick one here because I want to point out that after I do this podcast, I'll be heading out. Team of Destiny, the book co-written by myself and Jerry Ratcliffe with some reporting by Scott German, Scott Ratcliffe, and Zach Peerless, is actually being delivered. In fact, I just got a text. It's actually being delivered as I'm speaking right now. So we have some deliveries to make. The books are delivered here. I've got some deliveries to make. My wife and I got to run over to Charlottesville, UVA Bookstore, Mincer's, and New Dominion Bookshop. We've got some running around to do this afternoon, so I've got to kind of cut this one short now. Good news. I knew that if I started doing the podcast, we've been waiting all day for the delivery. It's kind of like when you, if the old talk about if it's dry where you are, wash your car, it'll rain, you know, kind of thing. Do a podcast, and then they'll deliver the book. So that they delivered the books or are delivering the books right now. And then we got to get them all over the place here. So we'll be doing that here this afternoon, which means for you, the listener, I mean, of course, this week you'll be getting, if you've already ordered copies directly from jerryratcliffe.com or augustafreepress.com, they'll be heading out your way soon. And if you haven't done that and you want to head out to New Dominion Bookshop, UVA Bookstore, Mincer's, County Line Mercantile, and Barbersville, you want to do that, you can head out to those locations and pick up your copy too. So so that's coming up. So I've got to cut this one a little quicker, but that's okay. There's stuff to get into here. Game 5 of the NBA Finals. I was going to have Jerry Carter join me to break that down, but it's a 3-1 series lead for Toronto. Since Jerry and I talked on Friday, we were at that stage. It was a 2-1 series still at that stage. But Toronto, even with Klay Thompson returning from Golden State, wins Game 4 at Golden State in Oakland and takes both games played in the series at this stage on the Golden State Warriors home floor. But talk now is that Kevin Durant will be back for Game 5 in Toronto. Toronto a chance to close it out at home. But Durant has not played in the series. In fact, he's not played for about a month, a little over a month. He was injured in Game 5 of the Western Conference semifinals as Golden State eventually dispatched Houston in that series. But he got injured in that game late. Has not played since, and that was about a month ago. And now it's funny, you look around and you see, well, Durant's back, that means Golden State's going to win the series. They're down 3-1, and Durant hasn't played in a month. We have no idea what his physical conditioning is going to be. Certainly a 100% Kevin Durant is a huge advantage for this Golden State team. Not only offensively, he was averaging 34 points per game in the playoffs, but defensively, he's a, you know, underrated guy on that side of the floor too, and really changes the lineups for Golden State, for Steve Kerr, head coach at Golden State. Makes that lineup defensively so much more flexible. But that's assuming 100% Kevin Durant. I don't think you can assume 100% Kevin Durant. I don't know what percent you can assume Kevin Durant, but it's just hard to say, oh yeah, he's just going to walk back in and beat Kevin Durant again. It's, you know, is he going to be, you know, 100% Kevin Durant, or is he going to be sort of the Kevin Durant version we've seen of DeMarcus Cousins, who came back admirably from his torn quad from back in the first round of the playoffs when Golden State won in 6 over the, I think it was the L.A. Clippers. But he had, you know, Cousins, who's, you know, when fully healthy, a top 10 or top 15 all-NBA talent. Has not looked like that much in this series. He had a good game too, but he really stunk it up in games 3 and 4. So do you get full Kevin Durant? Do you get some percentage of Kevin Durant and some percentage of Kevin Durant better than no Kevin Durant? No question. But, you know, is it enough to turn the tide of this series? And, you know, if a win in game 5 for Golden State, yes, then the Warriors return home, chance to tie it up, send it back for a game 7 in Toronto, but you got to win this one first. And, So I'm not so sure I buy into the idea. You can hear it in my voice. I'm not sure so sure I buy into the idea that Durant's going to make that much of a difference tonight. But that is tonight at, I believe that's at 9 o'clock tonight. So Terry Bowden. I was going to talk Terry Bowden news real quick. This is ACC football news. Terry Bowden, former coach at Auburn, had a great run there. Didn't have such a great run at Akron. Got fired in December after a seven-season run that saw the Zips go 35-52. Now, this is a funny thing. The 63-year-old Terry Bowden is an unpaid intern, basically a grad assistant at Clemson, where he's enrolled in a graduate program for athletic leadership, and he's going to be assisting the program there. That's kind of interesting. Not only has this Bowden, of among the Bowden family, of course, Bobby Bowden, the longtime coach at Florida State, and his brother Terry was, Tommy was the head coach at Clemson before Dabo Swinney took over interim. Dabo Swinney was on the staff for Tommy Bowden, and then when Tommy Bowden got fired, I believe it was 2008, I'm seeing here now in a story. He took over, Swinney took over, and he's led Clemson back to greatness, and in fact, beyond the level of greatness that Clemson even had back in the Frank Howard and Danny Ford years. So now, another Bowden back on the staff, and as a 63-year-old grad student, unpaid intern. So, it's the rich get richer in one sense. He was 35-52 at Akron. That's a place that's, I'm sure, obviously going to be hard to win, consistently in the MAC and that kind of thing. But a guy who was 47-17-1 at Auburn, 11-0 in 1993, we remember that. He had success at Samford in the FCS level. A couple of Division II stops, also had some success at Salem and in North Alabama. And, another guy that's it's kind of like what Alabama does. Alabama seems Nick Saban, whenever a coach gets let go somewhere who had, a great run somewhere else, hey, let's put him on as a analyst or as an, intern or whatever kind of thing you can throw a guy into. And then we have another smart guy in the room when we're making up game plans, when we're breaking down opponents and that kind of thing. And that's what Clemson's able to do here with Terry Bowden. So big advantage for Clemson there. And 63-year-old grad student, Terry Bowden. Boy, that makes me, I'm only 46, it'll be 47 in a couple weeks. Maybe I can go back to school one day. Yeah, that's what I should do. Go back to school one day. So the rich get richer in a sense there at Clemson. And wrapping up our quick podcast today, New Japan Pro Wrestling. Okay, so I'm still trying to build an audience here for our wrestling coverage. I'm a big fan. I've worked in the business as a promoter, as a writer, creative guy. I love, folks who listen to this part of our podcast on a regular basis know that I love New Japan Pro Wrestling. I'm only a relatively recent convert, last roughly year and a half or so, that I've been following closely New Japan. But Dominion is their big summer show for wrestling fans based in the States. Think of it as SummerSlam. WWE has its big event of the year, WrestleMania, in April, and then SummerSlam is in August, and that's their big mid-year event, if you want to call it. Dominion for New Japan is their June show every year. It's their mid-year event, and then Wrestle Kingdom is their WrestleMania, and they have that in January. So it's basically they're 6 months apart, whatever. And Dominion, once again, lived up to that reputation, I thought. Main event was Kazuchika Okada, the IWGP World Champion, defending against Chris Jericho. Okada won the match. It wasn't quite, it wasn't an Okada match, if you want to say. Okada's, famous for his four-match series with Kenny Omega. Each of those matches, they're four of the top five matches of all time, if you ask me, in terms of how each were executed, the drama, etc. I mean, and everything about those matches. If you get the New Japan app, watch all four of those matches. And I think I've said this before, I'll say it again. Then you have to remind yourself to keep watching pro wrestling, because it's not going to get any better than what you watch there. But this match, those are two guys, Okada and Omega, are two of the top three, four wrestlers working right now in the business. And so you put them together in a series like that, and you're going to get the results that you got there in terms of the execution of matches. Jericho, in his late 40s, you know, he was the first unified WWE champion. He, you know, famously in 2001 beat The Rock and He beat The Rock and Mick Foley in two matches to unify the title in one night on one pay-per-view. Few have had the run, the 30-year run that Chris Jericho has had in his career, dating back to his late teens when he started as a young wrestler. But in his late 40s, he's not the worker in the ring that he certainly used to be. But one thing, he's actually just as good or better on the mic and in terms of psychology. And so he's reinvented himself both in New Japan and All Elite Wrestling AEW as a brawling heel. I mean, in the tradition of a Terry Funk or a Bruiser Brody or Stan Hansen, I mean, he's not got the size of any of those guys, but Jericho has, with his age, diminishing his ability to be the high flyer that he always was. Now he's more of a ground-based psychology guy and a great heel. And I heard Dave Meltzer talking about this on his podcast from yesterday. Not the kind of heel that tries to get you to like him. He's a classic heel. He wants you to hate him. He wants you to boo him, and he'll do things to incite that. And so that was that kind of match. It wasn't an Okada, technically proficient, awesome match in that sense, but it did carry off what it needed to do. And so I definitely recommend that one. Two other matches on that card that I would, get the New Japan app, fast forward to the end, the last 2 hours of the show. These three matches took up the last 2 hours of the show. And that's what you get when you watch New Japan. You actually get in-ring action. Tetsuya Naito challenging Kota Ibushi for the IWGP Intercontinental Championship. They don't treat their Intercontinental Championship as something to put on a guy, just to have somebody hold the title. They actually put it on, one of their better guys, and having Ibushi and Naito competing. A lot of crazy sick bumps in this one, maybe several too many that were too crazy and too sick. But still, if you know at the end that, as far as I know, Ibushi took a really nasty, particularly nasty bump. Among all the nasty bumps in this one, he took a really nasty one. A German suplex on the ring apron that was, it had to have been a botched move. There's no way that it was intended for him to hit his head on the side of the apron on his way to the floor. But that one was one that had to have caused a concussion, could have caused some neck issues. No word on his status. He finished the match. I think they wrestled another 15 minutes after that particularly cruel and twisted, sick bump. But finished the match out. Seemed a little diminished at the end. But that was a heck of a match. And then Will Ospreay and Dragon Lee for the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship. Will Ospreay is in that mix for top three or four wrestlers in the world with Omega and Okada. And Ospreay is someone now, he's actually had some neck issues himself, and he's not quite the high flyer he was. I mean, he still does a lot of stuff in the air. Just his matches used to be, a much higher percentage of high flying moves, and now he's adding, and now that he's getting older, he's trying to extend his career. A guy who's still in his mid-20s, I think 26 years old, he is adding some more ground-based wrestling, some more submission-type wrestling to his antics with the aerial stuff. And he and Dragon Lee put on just a heck of a match. So all three of those matches, I'd fast forward to the last 2 hours of the show and just enjoy. Just sit back and enjoy. It's a great show. Much better than anything you'll see stateside, at least at this point. All Elite Wrestling notwithstanding, they'll come out of the gate in a few months with a challenge with a lot of guys who've worked in New Japan, Omega, the Young Bucks, among them. The challenge will be to live up to what they did there. And we'll see if AEW can do that. But in the meantime, you've got New Japan. And that app, they don't pay me to say this. I'm just saying it. 999 yen per month, $9.11 a month. Very comparable price to the WWE Network. And a lot better wrestling quality. So that should wrap us up for our podcast. Again, quick one today, less than 30 minutes. I try to do them about an hour long each. But I got some important work to do. Got to get those books out to Mincer's and to New Dominion Bookshop and to the UBA Bookstore and County Line Mercantile. Team of Destiny, Inside Virginia Basketball's run to the 2019 National Championship, co-written by Jerry Ratcliffe and myself. And you can still order them online through AugustaFreePress.com. You're already here, most likely. Or you can go to JerryRatcliffe.com. You can also pick them up at those locations. And so we got to deliver those today. So my wife is texting me right now saying, get done with that podcast so we can get out there and get those books to those very hungry booksellers. They want to get those books out themselves. So for the book, for my wife who wants me to get done with this, and for thank you for listening. Signing off, I am Chris Graham. Wahoo-wah.